Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'm DJ Drainfield.
I'm Micah.
And this is Book It.
The following views presented in this half hour do not reflect the views of KDVS, KDVS sponsors, or the University of California.
If it was not apparent from the background music.
It's a serious show today.
This is a very serious show today.
Yeah.
We will be reviewing The Godfather by Mario Puzo.
My gosh.
Super exciting stuff. How do we want to get into this? I guess we can preface.
The headphones are broken.
Yep. Micah has not seen the movie.
Never.
And I have seen the movie many times over. I quite enjoy The Godfather Part 1 and 2. I've never seen Part 3, but I don't care to either, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Heard bad things.
Interesting. So the book covers, you said...
Yeah, so the book, with respect to the film, it covers all of Part 1 and has some extra stuff that occurs during the chronology of Part 1 that we don't see on screen.
Mm.
And then it also covers about half of Part 2.
Interesting.
Yeah. Mm. And it's like the flashback sequences in Part 2. Because there's a section where we learn about
Vito's life.
That's in Part 2. Mm. Yeah. But with that out of the way, do you want to start with our opening thoughts and then move on to, like, specific stuff within the book we enjoyed or didn't enjoy?
Yeah.
Cool.
Do you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
I can go first.
Okay. I think mine will be a lot shorter than yours, probably.
Then why don't you go first?
Okay. I was explaining to DJ Drainfield and DJ Nadier, shout out. After reading this book, I don't really like... mafia-centered, like, films or, like...
You don't like crime dramas?
Media? Not really. Mm-hmm. I'm learning. I didn't really know that before I read this book, to be honest. But I realized I don't really enjoy it. So reading this book, honestly, the book wasn't bad. Like, it was definitely a lot better than Another Country, I will say. But also, I don't think I would have read it if it wasn't for the show, which I appreciate. Shout out, Book It. For making me read things I would not
we
have
We almost read it last
read.
Quarter for Cirque du Soleil Mon as well, yeah.
I was excited to read it because I was like, I've never seen the movie. Also, I thought it'd be, like, cool to read.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But I realized very shortly into it, I don't like crime-centered, I guess, like, media that much. So reading it was kind of rough for me. I feel like sometimes when I don't enjoy what I'm reading... I have to force myself to read and, like, lock in sometimes. And I did that. But, you know, I still think the book was good. I just think it personally was not for me.
Mm-hmm.
It made me really want to watch the movies. So I think I'll probably do that soon. I enjoyed... I'm trying to think of things that I enjoyed. Or should I save that for later?
So you don't like... crime media, but you liked Chungking Express where that girl breaks into the guy's apartment every
listen
day.
This is
whoa.
Do not bring Chungking Express. Listen, that's my goat. I love her. The goldfish thing she had going on, I don't know why,
a little weird,
but, like, yeah. I support women's wrongs and rights. Most of the time. But no, Chungking Express is different. Okay,
no, I'm just kidding. Not comparable.
I don't know, I just feel like it's a little too dramatic for me, you know what I mean? I also don't enjoy media that's, like, really... Not, like... how do I explain this? Like, too... Actually, I don't know what I'm going to say. I was going to say too realistic. Or not realistic, but, like... I don't know. I have a thought in my head, but I'm not wording it right now, so I'll keep that for later. But
you don't like media that feels, like, grounded, I guess?
Not grounded, but, like... I don't know. I think I should just pretend that what I said didn't happen.
We're gonna ignore that.
That's not word. I didn't word it how I wanted it to be worded. And I forgot what else I was going to say. So I think you should start. I'll just keep the rest of my thoughts for after.
Sure. I'll say I definitely liked it a lot more than you.
Yeah.
I think that, I've really loved, like, the Godfather movies, at least the first two, since I was, like, a child. Mm. I watched them when I was, like, 10 years old with my parents, and I was like, this is awesome. I personally really do enjoy crime dramas and stuff like that. My favorite TV show is Better Call Saul. What's up?
This makes sense why I never got into Breaking Bad. There I tried to watch Breaking Bad, and I was like, I can't do this.
Also, the first season's kind of a drag, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But I enjoy, like, crime dramas and all that quite a bit. I mean, like, do you consider, like, Death Note a crime drama? Because it technically is, right?
I feel like with Death Note, it's like, I'm going to be so honest, I didn't really like Death Note like that.
Okay,
like, I liked
it,
but I have never rewatched it. Like, mm-hmm. I don't care too much about it. Like, I like the characters, like, L. But that's, like, kind of it. Like, I've never gotten, like, super into Death Note.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't... Maybe... I don't know.
It just seems to be a long-running theme for you.
Yeah, it does.
Fair enough. What about One Piece? They're literally pirates.
Listen, One Piece is different because it's One Piece.
No, I'll stop. I'm just giving you a hard time.
We should review One Piece.
No. But, I really enjoyed it. I think that I like it a lot more than I liked the movie. Yeah, the movies. Mm. I think it does a really good job of embellishing the story and interactions. And I think that every character feels like they have a lot more depth.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I personally became far more acquainted with each character in the story, because there's just so much more narration, and mm-hmm. you get to really see the backstories versus a movie that has to show it to you. A book can just tell it to you and be like, this is how this guy grew up. This is what this guy believes. This is why, like, blah, 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 blah. And you get all of that in a way that a movie can't really deliver it. And I think that that's the advantage of the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it does it really well. So I really quite enjoyed it. I enjoy the genre. Mm-hmm. What's up?
I remember, but
yeah, no,
are
go
you,
for
are
it.
Done?
I'm kind of, and yeah.
Okay, I was gonna say two things that I heard you and DJ Nadia talking about. I think another part of the book I didn't enjoy is, like, it'll go back and forth kind of.
Oh really?
Between I feel like you said something about, like, the movie's more linear, right? Or
the first movie is more linear.
Yeah, I feel like when I'm reading books and things like that, like, I feel like I enjoy them more when it's just, like, linear. I don't like when things go back and forth.
Hmm.
Yeah, so that's something I wanted to mention. Also, what DJ Nadia said about, like, I enjoy media, like, specifically books and, like, movies and films and things like that, more when, like, they have, like, an emotional effect on me.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, I don't know. So, like, I don't know. I think I, like, really...
Continue.
Sorry. I think I like really, like, emotional books a lot more, or, like, kind of sad books. And that's something I was thinking about when DJ Nadia was talking about it. But I didn't say anything then because I was trying to finish
the
last, like, 10 pages of a book.
I'm, like, kind of the opposite. This is, like, a quote from my conversation with DJ Nadia, like, right outside the studio 20 minutes ago. But I'm not a really emotive consumer of media. Like, I like media that really moves me. Like, one of my favorite films is Moonlight, because I felt really moved by it.
Mm.
But another one of my favorite films is Whiplash, and I didn't feel very personally moved by it. Mm. I just thought it was a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I'm particularly moved by The Godfather emotionally either, but I think I still enjoy it for its story. And because of that, I don't think I need to feel, like, a deep emotional pull.
Mm-hmm.
I think I just need to feel engaged with the characters, feel like they're well-developed, and feel like the story plays itself out well.
Mm-hmm.
Also, to your point about the linearity of the story, I actually really, really, really love non-linear stories.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's my favorite format of media, or at least, like, film and book when it's fiction. I think there's a really cool payout you get from a non-linear story. I think a really good example of this, even though a lot of people hate this movie, is Slumdog Millionaire. And I'll give the basic premise of it right now. So it's a guy on India's version of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, and he keeps getting these questions right.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, the producers of the thing think that he's cheating because he's a slumdog, you know? He's just, like, some guy from a poor background, whatever. And so they're like, how does he know all these things? He must be cheating. How is he doing it? He's getting interrogated by the police, whatever, whatever. Sorry, spoilers. And then the plot of the movie is basically telling you the story of his life piece by piece,
mm-hmm.
and how each one of those stories led him to learning what would end up being the answer to a question.
Mm-hmm. See, that sounds interesting.
No, it's really cool.
That,
because it's what it truthfully is it's the game show is used as a mechanism to tell the story of this guy's life.
Mm.
And to give a view into the life of, like, a poor person in India.
Mm.
But I think, obviously not the experience of everyone. It's an interesting life, right?
Yeah.
But I think that's what I enjoy, is that I see something and then I understand why that thing is. And I think it's really cool to get that dynamic.
Mm.
And I think The Godfather does that really well in the book, at least, in certain aspects.
Yeah.
Personally.
I think it's quite funny that we're the complete opposite, I feel like, when it comes to reading books.
On fiction, at least, yeah.
Yeah, at least in fiction. Mm-hmm. Well, I think in general, because don't you prefer nonfiction?
Yeah,
right?
I mostly read
and
nonfiction.
And I feel like I mainly read fiction.
No, yeah.
So, I don't know. I think it makes
you
the show...
You get it all on Book It.
Yeah.
What were you going to say? It makes the show?
I think it makes the show a lot more interesting whenever we talk about things. Yeah, I feel like there's another point I wanted to bring up.
Oh, yeah, even, like, with poetry, right? Like, I read poetry, you don't, so yeah. It's like, yeah, I think we consume very different types of books.
Yeah, but it makes the show a lot more interesting, because I feel like our choices, this is not even about The Godfather, but I feel like it makes our book choices a lot.
I think it's really evident who picked which book each week, right?
But also, it kind of makes the other person, like, expand themselves.
I agree.
Like, I don't think I would have read a lot of the poetry that we've read.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, The Godfather, if it hadn't been for you choosing them, so.
You're too kind. would you have read, like, Black Skin, White Masks by Frantz Fanon?
I think I probably would have.
Mm-hmm.
Just, I don't know. I think more specifically, like, the poetry and, like, certain books that you've chosen.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Anyways. now let's talk about the book. Yeah. I think that this book has a lot of really interesting themes throughout. I wanted to ask you, what do you think is the theme or motif that you felt stuck out to you the most?
I did not think about that at all. I'm going to be so
real. You didn't perceive any themes?
No, like... I feel like I'm being put on the spot, honestly. Like,
okay.
I need to think
about
that.
I can give my answer, because I do have an answer.
Okay, please give your answer.
I think there's a really interesting dynamic of destiny within this book that gets harped on several times over. And I think that... this is not, like, some crazy analysis I'm making. I think it's pretty evident from the narrative. But Michael is the embodiment of his father, Don Vito. His understanding or belief in how destiny works. Because when we're introduced to Michael, he's a veteran, he's the only one of the brothers who's not involved in the family business, and he really has no interest in it. He really only cares about his girlfriend, and he pays respect to his family. But then through the, I guess, direction of the story, he, in a very roundabout way, and if you were to meet him in the beginning of the story, would not expect him to become the person he becomes at the end. And even in the beginning of the story, they tell you Don Vito believes he's the only one who's suited to become his successor. And life brings him to that point. And they really, really harp on this over and over in the book. They say there's a reason Don Vito always believed in destiny, or Michael didn't always understand why his father believed in destiny, stuff like that. And I think that it's a really interesting theme, because you see the Godfather as a figure that can essentially make whatever he wills occur, even when people are unwilling to come to common ground with him. He is the one, he's like the driving force, or has the power to be the driving force to make whatever he wishes occur. And I think that that's really similar to how destiny functions in some way, in which your will may be in one direction, but ultimately there's a separated guiding hand that steers where life and your material reality will go. And I think it's really cool how they use The Godfather as the tool to show how he creates these situations, but also even in situations like Michael getting, about a third into the book, spoilers, by the way, we're gonna get into spoilers. You had over 50 years to read it. You know, if you wanted to, you could have, you know?
Also, it's a review show, I feel like.
Yeah, you know, yeah. But about a third into the book, there's an attempt on Don Vito's life, and Michael gets revenge on the attempted killer, or the one who planned the attempted hit. And even though Don Vito didn't necessarily agree with that happening, it ultimately still proved him right, in that that was like the biggest thing that led to Michael becoming a mafioso later in the story, because that was the first time he got his hands dirty and got involved in the family business. And so even when Don Vito isn't the guiding hand, fate still guides these characters to their end point. And I think that's pretty cool. I think that theme stuck out to me so much. When I was reading the book, I was tagging every time they mentioned Destiny for the most part, because I was like, they really want you to understand how, like, or why there's this belief of destiny amongst these characters, and how the Godfather functions as the destiny decider for so many. And it's literally in the name, Godfather, right? Those, a lot of people who believe in determinism are religious. And so I think that's a really interesting angle to it, in my opinion, that he functions as the god within this community.
They mention in the book too, right?
What did they mention? Sorry.
Michael said, I literally just read a thing about, Michael says, like, he sees himself as God.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. His whole point is that, like, the Godfather is, like, the god of his people, whatever. And the, you know, little cover for it, I think on the book and the movie, is a puppeteer holding the little sticks and the strings, right? Like, he's the one who sits behind and, like, makes stuff happen.
Yeah.
And I think it's pretty interesting. Like, Don Vito believes in destiny because he's the one who decides it. I think that's pretty cool.
That's fire.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think you put that very well. I feel like I didn't tag the book at all, which is... I didn't tag the book at all. Partly because I'm trying to save all my...
tags.
My tags, because I go a little crazy sometimes.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah.
And there's another book that I want to read that I'm going to save them for. But also, I don't know. I feel like my... like kind of general dislike of the story made me not really think a lot about it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's kind of bad on my part. Maybe I'll reread this book again, but I don't know. I enjoy everything that you said, and I think you put it very well.
How kind.
Very kind.
I think with relation to media, I really like over-consuming media. I really enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
So like when I read Berserk, I spent the next, like, 3 months just watching Berserk analysis videos, and I still do.
I did the same thing.
I did the same for, like, Breaking Bad. I remember last year when I rewatched The Godfather, part 1 and 2, actually. I watched, like, an hour-long video essay on YouTube about it, and I was like, this is really cool. And the movie doesn't really get into this Destiny thing either, or not as heavily, to my recollection. It's been a year since I watched it, just about. And so that's why when I was reading the book, I think I also had the perspective of the film. So when I saw differences, that always piqued my interest. Because I'm like, this is interesting. Why wasn't this included in the film? And how does it function within the book distinctly? And was it needed in the film? And I actually think this Destiny point could have been really cool in the film. But I think the Destiny part is also implied by Michael's ascension to the Don.
I feel like I really need to watch the movie and compare the two.
I think you would like I don't know if you'd like the movie if you don't like crime media. It's a 3-hour movie, part one, but I think it's a really beautiful piece of cinema. Like, I was talking to DJ Nadier outside. I was upfront that I liked the book more, and so does DJ Nadier, actually. But I think that the film does some things that the movie, or sorry, that the book just can't. By virtue of being a book.
Yeah.
Like, there are some really incredible visuals and juxtapositions where it's like the movie will, like, splice A and B together, but the book will be like A happens, then B happens. And I think it's just a lot less powerful. But I don't wanna get too deep into the movie.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No,
we're reviewing
the book. I feel like I might honestly like the book more. I feel like that's always the case with me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, I feel like I never prefer a movie to a book, so
I don't think I do either.
Yeah.
I think that the reason why is because when you can get into, like, the head of a character, where this is a narrative where these people are thinking a lot about every single interaction, everything is very calculated, everything is very methodical, and I think that when you can get the narrator telling you this is exactly what Michael Corleone is thinking in this conversation, or this is exactly how this person is reacting, beyond just, like, a facial expression, there's a lot of value in getting that, because I feel like you get deeper into the, like, psychosis or psyche is the word I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
The psyche of the character. And I think it's especially relevant for a story like this, not just because every character is so intentional with everything they do, but also, or at least the main characters of interest, but also because these are characters that are intentionally supposed to be stone-faced,
mm-hmm.
right? And are not trying to give too much away to the person in front of them. So when Al Pacino in the film plays Michael Corleone, he can't show too much like expression in like critical moments because otherwise he gives it away to whoever he's like negotiating with or talking yeah. to. And so we as the audience don't get that either. But in the book, you actually do get that narration, you understand what's happening in his mind, and then it also informs how you interpret his like stone cold reaction in these conversations.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's like a really strong edge the book has over the film, because they're able to do that really effectively too. I think Mario Puzo does a really good job of embellishing every single interaction so you really understand the underlying narrative that's occurring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, also I feel like every time I watch a movie that's like based on a book or whatever, I really don't like when they omit things from the book.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Yeah, I agree with everything you said though. And also I want to say, I know I said like multiple times I dislike the book. It's not a bad book. I think it's a really good book actually. I just don't think like
it's
the story is for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I do want to say I think it was a really good book. A lot better than Another Country. We haven't read that many other books, honestly, so...
We haven't read that much fiction.
Yeah, there's
I'm sure you liked Temple of the Golden Pavilion more because you're a big Mishima head, right?
I love Mishima.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But...
I don't know. But yeah, no, it's a good book, I would say.
Yeah, I think also... It's like... It is like the quintessential, like, mafia story, right? So if you're not into that, you won't enjoy it very naturally. Because all of the tropes you see... in like other media, like I don't know, like The Sopranos or Scarface, will in some way probably be influenced by The Godfather.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, it's just a harder read if you don't like that, because it's so deep into that whole aesthetic.
Yeah.
One thing, this is a fun fact. I know I said we wouldn't talk about the movie too much. This is what I learned. My cousin went on like a tour at Paramount Studios over the weekend.
Uh-huh.
And she knew I was reading The Godfather, and she was telling me about it. And she was like, during the production of The Godfather, the mafia was like, the actual like Italian mafia in our real world was like upset about a film, like a big budget film being made depicting them, because it may like, you know, cause a stir. So they like oversaw the production of the film and were on set every single time. And in some of the scenes in the movies where there are like extras who are like just part of the mafia ambiguously, those are actual like mafiosos. And during the production, they were just like, we don't really need to like hire extras. Like these guys are here. They're going to be here anyway. We might as well just throw them in the movie and not give them any lines.
Yeah.
And that's also why they never say the word mafia.
Oh.
In The Godfather.
That's low-key fire.
That's a very interesting tidbit, right?
Yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah.
Shout out your cousin.
Yeah, shout out.
Shout out. Do you have any favorite parts of the book that you...
Favorite parts in the book?
I have mine, so...
I'll let you go first while I think about it.
I think, honestly, my favorite part... This is kind of sad, but my favorite part is when... So his... my brain. The Don, Vito... He dies in the garden.
Yeah.
I think that's my favorite part of the book, because he says life is beautiful as he's... Okay, actually...
Like, those are his final words.
Yeah, his final words are life is beautiful. And I just think it was really... I don't know. I just like that, like, how they describe him, like, tending to his, like, tomato plants or something.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, describing, like, getting rid of ants or whatever. And then he describes, like, the, like... Like death, but like as the sun. Mm-hmm. So he feels like the sun coming on him or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then he like shoos away his grandson. And then like as he's dying, and I think it's Michael who like has him, right? Like,
he's holding his hand as he's dying, yeah.
Yeah, and he says life is beautiful. And I think that was my favorite part of the book.
I think a really interesting angle to him after he retires is just gardening and stuff like that. And this comment about how life is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
What I found really fascinating is that his character is someone who's responsible for, like, a lot of, like, death, pain, suffering.
Yeah.
And he spends his final days cultivating life through plants. I think that's a pretty cool... It feels intentional to me.
Yeah.
In that he seeks this, like, peaceful life, but in the process, he's, like, creating life for other things. Yeah. I think my favorite part was, I think this was something they did better in the book than they do in the film.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, there's about, like, what is it? Like, it must be like halfway through, maybe a little more. Don Vito's oldest son, Sonny, short, like, nickname for, his real name is Santino.
Yeah.
He's killed by a rival family. And how they reveal to you that he's died in the book is, in the very beginning of the book, there's a mortician who needs a favor from the Don. And so, in the first act, he, you know, handles the favor, everything like that, and he's like, you'll owe me later on. And so he gets shot, Sonny, many, many times, extremely disfigured, everything. And so the Don just calls the mortician and is like, I need to call in my favor now. We don't know why. And so he's a mortician, so you know someone has died. And then you get to the the scene where he reveals his son has died, and that's how you find out. We don't even know how. And then afterwards, they give the whole narration on how that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was a really cool way of revealing his death, because the last we saw him, he was, like, going off to go handle some business.
Yeah.
And now he's dead.
Handle some business.
Yeah. And so I thought that was a really cool way to deliver that reveal. I really enjoyed that in the book. But we are at time.
Up next
is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Should we say what we're reading next week?
Yeah, next week we'll be reading Imperialism, the Highest Stage of Capitalism by Vladimir Lenin. Very exciting.
It's going to be crazy.
Big change
from
this week.
Stay tuned for that if you'd like.
Yeah. All right, bye for now.
Bye.
Out now, this is the Diz, Dizzy Gillespie, that is, and let me give you some information. If you want to hear some good sounds, the sounds that's round, keep your radio tuned to KDVS in Davis, 90.3 on your FM dial. Look out. Ow. This is the Diz signing off.
Welcome to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Dr. Andy, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Thanks very much for tuning in to your local campus and community radio station, KDVS, that is, on a Wednesday afternoon. where, for the last 24 years, I've been delving deep into the basement of Freeborn Hall, a one-day-to-be-raised building, where we once raised the roof with all sorts of bands and performers upstairs, the Talking Heads, the Police, but also poets such as Maya Angelou, Jello Biafra I saw right upstairs. And I saw novelists, I saw NPR personalities give presentations in this very building. And then, years or decades later, I had some of those same personalities on this radio show. Folks who I've asked to talk about various forms of creativity. Often that means poetry, but also people who care about theater, dance, the arts, contact juggling. If it's creative, if it's offbeat, and especially if it's local to the Sacramento Valley, then likely I will cue the theme music of this radio program. Thank you, John Schofield. And read an introduction. For instance, on this week's show, we have two poets, old favorites of mine both, who I'm looking forward to catching up with. One is Susan Kelly DeWitt, the former Wallace Stegner Fellow, who has a new book out called Frangible Operas. What kind of operas, ladies and gentlemen? Frangible. We'll hear from Susan Kelly DeWitt. She's one of the Sacramento Valley's most prominent poets. And then in the second half of the program, Michelle Bitting. Michelle Bitting has a new book out herself. In fact, she was shortlisted for the 2023 Craft Character Sketch Challenge. And she's the author of 5 poetry collections, including Nightmares and Miracles from Two Sylvia's Press. I'm really looking forward to talking to her about her latest chapbook titled Dummy Ventriloquist. So, in addition to Michelle Bitting, we've got Susan Kelly DeWitt,